America.
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. That's right. If the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, you can call in. This is Michael Dean, and it's After Dark. And the call-in number is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. And I think this show is kind of becoming like the Libertarian Dear Abby. I like it. We don't talk a lot about government tyranny. It's actually a game show where the loser is the person that brings up tyranny. But people have been calling in and asking about personal issues, and they want to hear answers from libertarians, I guess, which I'm just laughing because I think it's cool, man. I think there's a space for that in this world, and I didn't even plan this show to be that, but it's kind of turning into that. So our host tonight, our Dear Abby, the Miss Manners to my Dear Abby, is Nikki Darling. How are you doing, Nikki Darling?
I am excellent. How are you doing?
I'm fun and feisty and fancy-free,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I can tell.
And we have some interesting topics to talk about, including toast, why it's the rage, and why I predicted it 25 years ago, and how the government wants to take our vapes from our cold, dead hands. I guess that's tyranny, but it'll probably just turn into a talk about how great vape is and how there should probably be toast flavored vape, and Nikki makes vape, so maybe that'll be her next big thing. But I do want to talk about a serious note. I want to eulogize a friend of mine who died. Dave Brocky of the band Guar was found dead at age 50 in his apartment. And you know, it's never a good death when the headline includes found dead. That means you did not die holding hands with loved ones surrounded by your many cats. It means, you know, probably that, I'm going to predict it's drugs. I know Dave Brocky, and he's dead now. I can talk about it. I've had a lot of personal conversations with him and tried to help him get clean a long time ago. I don't know if he's clean or not, but, you know, who knows, man. But, you know, I have a souvenir from Dave Brocky, which is kind of interesting. You know, it's not an autograph because I knew him before he was famous. His band Guar, actually his band Death Piggy, which not a lot of people know about, but their music's up on YouTube if you want to go listen to it. It's not radio friendly, but search Death Piggy and listen to his old band. That kind of Guar was basically a joke that they would do in the middle of a serious set of kind of jokey Death Piggy music. And it was one of those things where, like, the joke became more popular than the thing. And then, you know, somebody in Death Piggy went to prison for stabbing somebody. Classic rock and roll story. So they just concentrated on Guar, and it became big. And then Beavis and Butthead said they liked Guar, and it became huge. Because Beavis and Butthead hated everything, remember? That's all they did was make fun of bands. But they loved Guar. So
yeah. I also heard, though, that one of the members died in 2011 on their tour bus, and he was only like 34 or something.
What did he die of? Corey, I think was his name. What did he
They
die
claimed
of?
It was a heart attack, but I don't know if that was
That's
like
drugs.
The coroner's thing.
That's drugs, man. People don't die of heart attacks at under 50, generally. Although, you know, I was hanging out. Here's another rock and roll story. I was hanging out with the guys from Porno for Pyros selling them drugs about 22 years ago, back when I was doing drugs. And they were playing three nights sold out in San Francisco, their first show of their first tour. And they had to cancel the third show because the drummer's brother died. And he died of a heart attack at like age 23. And it was weird, though, because he didn't do drugs at all. And he died of a heart attack in a movie theater watching a movie. And my first question to Martijn, the bass player in that band, was, what movie was he watching? And Martijn just kind of looked sad, like, Michael, that's in really bad taste.
Yeah.
And then he kind of hung his head for a second, and then he laughed and said, that was my first question, too. So the thing that I have from Guar, and okay, Guar, like I knew them. Not only did I see his band, you know, and play gigs, my band Baby Opaque played with Death Piggy in Richmond, but my band Bomb played a gig with Guar in Raleigh, North Carolina, before GWAR was big, there were literally more people on stage when GWAR played than there were in the audience. That's how early in their career it was. But the souvenir I have of GWAR, it's not an autograph. It's not a picture of me holding him or anything like that. It's a scar on my forehead where I had three stitches, where Dave Brocky accidentally hit me in the head with his bass guitar during a Death Piggy show. And if you look at any close-up picture of me, you can see it. There's a little scar about a third of an inch long or half inch long above my right eye, about 2.5 inches up. And that's
very unique.
Yeah. And I wonder if I can sell it on eBay now that my friend has died. I'd like to auction off my scar. No, but yeah. Dave Brocky was a really good guy. He was incredibly creative, incredibly smart. Mm-hmm. He went to art school, VCU, you know, in Virginia, and, you know, kind of art school dropout, typical rock and roll story. But he was, I had some, like, let's just say all night conversations with the guy, watch the sun come up while talking to him. And he was brilliant, incredibly brilliant. And I'm kind of sad he died. I was really shocked to find out that he died. Not shocked, like surprised. Like, you know, a rock musician died at age 50. That's kind of old for a rock musician to die. But
yeah, I was quite happy to see the Facebook response of it, too, because I figured most of the people I knew didn't know who GWAR is. So,
Everybody knows who GWAR is. GWAR! Yeah, he's in my documentary, DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. And I interviewed him in a pornography store in San Francisco. It just seemed like the place to do it. He was playing with his band, solo band, the Dave Brocky Experience, between GWAR shows at the Covered Wagon in San Francisco, this little tiny club. And I went there at soundcheck, and he's like, "Hey, Dave, what's up?" "Hey, Michael, hey, look, can I do an interview? I'm doing this movie." And he's like, "Sure." And I had my little camera in my backpack, and you know, I later filmed some of his band playing that night and put that in. And also I had some footage of GWAR on stage from a previous tour that I filmed of them, like, feeding the Pope to a dinosaur or something on stage. But, you know, we were looking for a place to interview him that would be interesting. And we walked out of the club, and it's in the middle of nowhere in this, like, industrial district. And I just looked across the street, and I was like, "Hey, there's a dirty bookstore." And we walked over there and said, "Hey, can I film an interview with my friend in here?" And the guy behind the counter making minimum wage was like, "I don't care." And, you know, he did it in like 20 minutes, guerrilla style. And filmed him in front of a bunch of racks of dirty movies. So, yep, that's Dave.
Well, where can we get this movie?
It's all on, you can buy a DVD of it on Amazon, or you can go to the Freedom Fiend site and click on the link that says Torrents or Torrent Club up at the top and download it free. Or I believe it's all up on YouTube, but it's up pretty low res, because that was back when, like, computers didn't have the processing power to do high def video or high def uploads. And I had to upload it in, like, chapter sections. Like, you couldn't even, you know, the internet and the computers weren't fast enough then in 2001 or whatever, 2004, I think it was, to, like, suitably upload a high def movie to, so I would say if you want to see it looking good, buy the DVD or download it free with the torrents.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll do.
So, Nikki, what's up with you?
Not much. I'm just really excited that it's spring, almost. But we're expecting 2 inches of snow in the morning.
You're in the D.C. area, right?
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. So, yeah. We lovingly refer to it as Mordor.
Mordor on the Potomac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, tell people a little bit about you. What makes you tick, and what do you think about, and what are your views on politics, religion, sex, and family?
Boy, that's a lot.
Or just politics.
Well, religion, I don't have any, but as a liberty-minded individual, I certainly don't mind if you do, as long as you don't hurt me with it. Politics, I am post-politics now.
I like that.
Yeah, you always, you know, what's that saying? Like, as a libertarian, you're like, 6 months away from being an anarchist or something?
I
believe that I'm there.
Well, this is like, this show is kind of the people who are post-anarchist, I think. We're like, we don't even care anymore, man. I mean, literally, I've been so busy with this Meowbit, Dotbit, Namecoin project of saving the internet and trying to spread the good news of that's like a full-time job on top of having two radio shows. And literally, I don't know what's going on. Like, I saw a meme picture the other day that was, Obama and Boehner, and the caption was, "We've decided we're going to wait till fall to invade Russia." And I was like, "I don't get it. I don't know what that's about. I have no idea." Like, I like that I'm so out of touch with all the current tyranny that I don't know that. And some people would say, "Oh, you have your head in the sand." And it's like, no, I don't, man. I know there's tyranny. And people just read me, you know, people send me articles like, "Did you hear about what the cops did?" And I'm like, same book, different chapter, man. Status gonna state, you know?
Yeah, and it gets overwhelming after a while. And eventually, like I do now, I just want to ignore the government and I take care of myself and I try not to intervene with them. I'm starting my seeds. I'm growing a garden. I work for myself.
Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about was intellectual property. Did you want to go there? Do you want to talk about that?
We could, but I have differing views on it.
Oh, gee, that makes horrible radio. Two people not necessarily fully agreeing on something. I think that makes great radio. Let's not get into it yet because it's kind of a whole segment or two. But I think we could talk a little bit more about you because this is your first time on this show and you're going to be a regular host on this show.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Well, what else could I say about myself? I don't really talk about myself.
You have pink headphones.
I do have pink headphones. They're $5.
Yeah, you sent a picture of your desk, and we were talking about how you can really learn a lot from people's desks. And there used to be this website called onyourdesk.com or something like that, and they actually published pictures of my desk back then, which looks very different from my desk now. But I like the picture of your desk with your pink headphones and the little sign you put up in front of your microphone on your microphone for this show. It says "Do not curse."
And I really am working very hard not to do that.
Well, we do have a button that we can press. It's called the Cuss Dump 3000. That's actually not what it's called. It's called 25-7 Systems, which is a great name for it because it actually kind of shifts time. So 25-7, it works 25-7. I like that. But I call it the Cuss Dump 3000. But we're going into the market here, into the free actual market where people can cuss, but not us. So
worms.
Have fun. Worms. We'll explain that when we get back, maybe.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yes. That's my old band Bomb that we're listening to there. That's the band that played with Guar a few times. This is Michael Dean After Dark. And Nikki was going to tell me about the Guarbecue that she attended. What is a Guarbecue?
It's like a big block party in Richmond, like a big barbecue. And it's just a bunch of crusty people hanging out and getting really drunk. And hanging out with Guar. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but I didn't really get to meet any of the band members.
You know what's funny? That guy Greg Gutfeld, you know, the guy on Fox News, when those horrible like five people screaming at each other program they have called The Five that replaced Glenn Beck screaming at himself. Greg Gutfeld is kind of funny, and he probably kind of leans libertarian. I mean, I'm not going to be an apologist and say he's a real libertarian because he's not. But, you know, he goes on there and makes jokes that kind of irk conservatives like, well, I was just backstage smoking some crack, and now I'm going to talk about fiscal responsibility. You know, he actually more than once, I think, had Dave Brocky on Red Eye, his other show, as a guest in like full Guar costume in character.
Really?
Yeah, to talk about
that's
politics.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Greg Gutfeld, you wouldn't believe it, but he goes on like Opie and Anthony all the time.
Oh, my wife just brought me some Cadbury cream eggs, and that's not product placement.
I love those.
Yeah, they're wonderful. My wife's so sweet. You got to talk with DJ tonight. You'd never talked
to her. She is wonderful, and she has the greatest voice.
Yeah.
It's great.
Truly does. Yeah. It's a pleasure living with her, and in every way, including that I get to hear her dulcet tones all the time. And if people don't know who DJ is, that's my wife, Deborah Jean. And a lot of the bumps, the 10-second liners that you hear when we go to a commercial are her voicing a lot of them, and the rest are me. But yeah, man. So Guarbecue. You want to talk about toast now?
Yeah, okay.
I sent you an article about toast. Oh, sound excited, man. It's radio. We have to be excited about toast. Well, here's the gist of this thing is Yahoo, which is incredibly statist news site. It used to be a search engine like Google, but now it's just they just write articles on. Yeah, Google just blew them out of the water, so they basically just write articles on interesting, ridiculous things and tell you why the government needs to control you more. But the interesting things that they have are kind of funny. And this is an article called Toast So Awesome You Can Charge $4 a Slice. And it's an article about how toast is the new big thing in San Francisco and Los Angeles. You know, it's kind of like it's the new muffin, the new cupcakes or something. Like, and there's high class restaurants or hipster restaurants that people are standing in lines around the block to get toast, basically. What do you think of that, Nikki?
Oh, well, it is being dubbed the hipster toast, but like any fad, it'll come and it'll go. And I don't eat bread personally, so I don't care about toast. But I know in California, they're always looking for the new fad.
And there's something in this article about like, why hasn't this caught on in New York City? And DJ's like, because they have good food there. Because they have bagels. Because they have wonderful bagels from Jewish delis that have been making it for 100 years. Yeah. Why do you want toast? So here's the thing that is interesting to me about this toast. My wife read me this like, you got to hear this, because she knew about my history of my love of toast. This is another, when I used to be a drug addict, I'm coming up on 20 years clean and sober on July. Well, I guess I say clean because people who say clean and sober don't really understand it or didn't do what I did. Anyway, I'm coming up on 20 years clean. So, but I am sober. I don't drink either. Don't smoky, any potty, but I absolutely think that like all drugs should be legal and heroin should be sold in vending machines as long as it's, you know, privately owned and operated and not taxed. And I think that all these potheads are ridiculous for saying, oh, we won. We can now buy government-controlled taxed marijuana. I'm like, that's not winning. So when I was a drug addict, I had this girlfriend and we ate a lot of toast because we didn't have money because we spent all our money on drugs. So all we could do is make toast. And then we'd make French toast, but really crappy French toast, like just, you know, white bread toasted, buttered with, you know, like margarine, whatever cheap butter sub soup could find, and then sprinkle white sugar on it and then a little bit of cinnamon. And we just lived on toast for like a year. And toast kind of became like our comfort other than drugs. We're like, oh, toast, man. Toast is so wholesome. Toast is good. And we dreamed of, here was our plan, was someday we'll get clean and we'll get our act together and we'll start a restaurant that only serves toast here in San Francisco. So like basically,
I did not,
but somebody did. Like I put that out in the universe and it happened. I predicted it. I made it happen, man, with my brain, with my brain grapes. Yeah, we're back. After this trip to the toast market.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
good evening. This is Michael Dean. It's After Dark. I'm chatting with Nikki Darling about toast and tyranny. So you had some comments more about toast. The toast is the new hipster food in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And, you know, a lot of – here's how you can tell the difference between old school Liberty people that are kind of cranky and the new breed. I'll bet there are people ranting on radio about this toast article and saying, this is indicative of the decadence in California. They're paying $4 for toast. This is what's wrong with the world. They're caring about toast more than they should. And you know what I say? It's the market at work, man, and it's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. It's supply and demand. And I will tell you, in this article, it says each loaf takes 36 hours to make. And that is true, because my mother has made bread, and it takes forever. And by the time it comes out, we devour the whole thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, man. If people want to pay $4 for toast, I not only have no problem with it, I celebrate it. And I predicted it. I predicted it in a drug-induced haze 21 years ago that San Francisco would be the home to toast restaurants. Now, in my vision, I owned the restaurant with the girl that I don't even talk to anymore, and the restaurant was called Toast. But you know, they got it mostly right of my vision. So, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I can imagine it now. It's like a smoky little cafe, and it's just toast and darkness.
You haven't been to San Francisco in a long time if you're imagining a cafe having smoke in it, unless it's bread smoke.
No, but I mean, back in your day, like when did they outlaw smoking there inside?
You could smoke in smoking sections of restaurants when I was there. I mean, you could smoke on planes back then too.
Yeah.
I've smoked on a plane. That's how old I am. I've smoked on a Greyhound bus in the smoking section of a Greyhound bus. I'll never take a Greyhound. I'm not anything about Greyhounds in general, but just like, you know, state to state buses are just some of the worst times of my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They smell sometimes because of that toilet in the back.
Well, they're also just full of like crazy people. I don't know. It just seems like everyone on there is like running from a murder rap or something.
Well, anyway, I was going to say that burnt toast can be toxic, especially to pregnant women.
Huh.
So even like those brown spots on your toast, if they're scraped off and inhaled, gets into the air. That's just what I've read. It's science.
Well, I also have heard burnt toast being used as a remedy for poisoning, because burnt toast will make you throw up. And it also is basically charcoal and will absorb some poisons that are taken orally. But I'm not recommending that. That's probably folk wisdom. I don't know if it's true or not. So,
well, I do remember a New Year's Eve where I was a little intoxicated and fed a loaf of bread. So,
yeah, that doesn't work.
It didn't work. You're right.
There's nothing that will quote unquote sober someone up that night from being drunk other than time. Coffee will just make you a very awake drunk who probably is scarier than one that falls asleep.
Yeah.
So what about toast flavored vape? You gonna make that?
Well, toast is only good with the stuff that you put on it. So it would have to be, I don't know, blueberry jam flavored toast. Because toast by itself, I mean, unless it's a really good bread like sourdough, but I can't imagine a sourdough juice.
So do you want to go on to this article about vape on Yahoo?
Sure.
New, like, we'll tell you what to think. See, here's my problem with Yahoo is I think there are people who use this as their source for everything to think, believe, and buy and vote.
That's – my mom uses The View for that, so I understand.
Really? Does she think you're insane?
No, she actually is coming around to my ways of thinking. She's changed her mind a lot. But when she tells me that Whoopi Goldberg said this, I just tell her, please be quiet.
Yeah. I think most actors should just shut up and act. Whoopi Goldberg's a pretty darn good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I love her character. I love her performance as a really hard-nosed, pricky cop in the movie The Player with Tim Robbins.
I didn't see that.
But I really don't care what her opinion is on guns or vape or how the world should be run, because and I guess this is me starting to sound like those right-wing conservatives, but most people in California and Most people in San Francisco and LA really have no idea how the world works. And an example is just the economic mess that San Francisco's in. I mean, it is collapsing into the sea because of 50 years of like magical thinking by the town leaders, you know. It is really, really socialistly run, and it's not in good shape. But here's what I'll say is I'm not those right-wing pundits complaining about those weirdos out in San Francisco and observing them from a powerful telescope, because I used to be one of them. I lived in San Francisco from 1986 until 2001.
Okay.
And then I moved to Los Angeles from 2001 until when DJ and I moved to Wyoming 4 years ago, until we wised up and moved to Wyoming. You're thinking of moving to Wyoming, aren't you?
It's on the list, yeah, definitely.
What's your short list of places?
Santa Fe, Wyoming. My boyfriend really likes Jackson Hole, New Hampshire, Denver, and maybe Arizona, like Tucson.
There's two places I would personally cross off that list right now. One would be Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and one would be Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Okay.
I mean, Santa Fe, New Mexico is kind of really, really hippie, and it's kind of like San Francisco on the desert. And Jackson Hole is – you will not be able to afford to live there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we just saw that as
you also
a general
can.
Area that's pretty-
I mean, Jackson Hole – Jackson – is not the same as Jackson Hole. Jackson Hole is basically like a ski lodge and a bunch of rental condos and stores that sell really overpriced stuff.
Okay.
And literally it's illegal to smoke a cigarette on the street there and they will arrest you. It's that kind of place. It is the San Francisco of Wyoming.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like Park City, Utah.
It's very much like Park City, Utah,
yeah.
And I'm sure Jackson would love to have a film festival that pulls in the beautiful people from Los Angeles. I've actually been to Sundance. It was an interesting experience, and it's and I've been to that town in the summer when it's not the Sundance Film Festival, because my parents-in-laws they didn't have a condo there. They just liked it so much they would like rent the same apartment every summer.
It is really beautiful. Yeah, I lived in Salt Lake City for a year, and I can honestly tell you that I really enjoyed it, despite it being Salt Lake City. It just, I think for me, I need scenery, and my boyfriend does too, and where we live right now, it's just really disgusting.
What you guys should do is drive around some of the places that you're thinking about. That's what we did with Wyoming. To decide where to live, we did a reconnaissance trip about 3 months before we moved here. And basically, we narrowed it down to three cities because my wife's a paralegal and she had to live somewhere that there are actually lawyers in order for her to have a job. And there's pretty much only three cities in Wyoming that have more than one or two attorneys. And Casper's one of them. One of them was Cheyenne, which we really didn't like. It's really flat and kind of like, we call it Denver North. It's kind of like Denver without the culture, I guess.
Yeah, my boyfriend's from Colorado, so he also likes the mountain area of Colorado.
Colorado has had a really bad year with acts of God, with nature, with... I mean, there's a radio station that like 9 months ago said, or a year ago said, yeah, we'd love to get you on. And every time I call back, it's like, well, there was just a mudslide and the transmitter fell down. Or then I call back a few months later and it's like, well, we got the transmitter up, but there's wildfires everywhere and we can't breathe. So call back in a month. And then there was another flood and it's just, I mean, I don't know if that's par for the course in Colorado, but I hear about Colorado stuff a lot because it's neighboring to Wyoming. And actually the wildfires in Colorado, I mean, we could smell them at our house. That's how they were covering like a huge part of the state, and we're 4 hours from the state line and we could smell the wildfires here.
Well, now you have me thinking my list, rethinking it.
Well, okay. Read it back to me now with the two taken off that I suggested taken off. Jackson also is just like, it's not a place to live unless you're a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a place that anyone probably lives unless they work in retail dealing with the tourist industry. And
okay.
I mean, Dick Cheney's ranch is in Jackson. But he's a billionaire, so.
Okay, well, my boyfriend likes Idaho, too. I mean, he wants to move somewhere that's gun-friendly, and I really like the Bear Lake area, so.
Yeah, there's a bunch of states right around here that are very gun-friendly, and it's, you know, basically Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, the Dakotas, Arizona to an extent, but I hear a lot of stuff about people getting hassled for guns in Arizona.
Well, they also have the border checks there, which extend like 100 miles north of the border. And my boyfriend would probably go ballistic if he had to get, you know, if he was stuck in that every morning going to work.
Yeah. I don't really want to live ever again anywhere near the U.S. border with any other country.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you live in like Tucson and then, you know, stuff hits the fan, you can just hop over to Mexico.
Do you really think that hopping over to Mexico is going to be a place to go if anything hits the fan? First of all, you can't have a gun there legally.
Well, but everyone does, so.
Yeah, because they're paying off the cops or they're part of the cartels. It's not easy for an American citizen to have a gun in Mexico.
Well, I think money talks and you could find somebody to sell you a gun because you definitely – I would never live in Mexico without protection.
Yeah, but if you got caught with a gun there, it would be like one of those prison movies. You know, I mean you'd be – in Mexican prisons, like you can't even necessarily get enough food to survive without having a family member bribing the guards.
Yeah, I don't want to end up in Mexican prison. But there is a Mormon compound in the middle of Mexico. It was like a Vice documentary. And they all have guns and they protect their community. And the government just kind of leaves them alone.
They probably have an arrangement with the government.
Yeah, most likely. I think it is Mitt Romney's like uncle or something that runs this place.
Mitt Romney is basically part of the military-industrial complex. He can do whatever he wants. He probably has U.S. Marines guarding him. There,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. So we'll talk more about places to go and things to do on this great blue ball called Earth.
Worms.
Worms. We say worms because people used to say word. Word back in the 80s. It's us making fun of that. It's a joke. But it's our aloha. It's hello and goodbye on the Freedom show.
Columnist. You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
Where the hip meet the hip replacement. It's good for young and old is what I'm trying to say. Where the hip meet the hip replacement. So there's an article on Yahoo Finance about vaping, which is, inhaling sweetened flavored nicotine instead of actually smoking cigarettes, which Nikki and I are doing constantly through this show. Right, Nikki?
Yes. Yeah. A lot.
This is some of the most sensationalist BS writing I've read in a long time.
Yeah, I thought it was The Onion.
A dangerous new form of powerful stimulants is hitting the markets nationwide. For sale by the vial, the gallon, and even the barrel. The drug is nicotine in its potent liquid form, extracted from tobacco and tinctured with a cocktail of flavorings, colorings, and assorted chemicals to feed the fast-growing electronic cigarette industry. These e-liquids, the key ingredients in e-cigarettes, are powerful neurotoxins. Tiny amounts, whether ingested or absorbed through the skin, can cause vomiting, seizures, and even be lethal. A teaspoon of even highly diluted liquid can kill a small child. But like e-cigarettes, e-liquids are not regulated by federal authorities. They are mixed on factory floors and in the back rooms of shops and sold legally online and in stores in bottles that are casually kept around the house for regular refilling of e-cigarettes. This article just looks like it's written as a precursor to outlawing something. What do you think of this, Nikki?
Yeah, definitely. And I would like to call out some of the things mentioned in the article. I've definitely licked e-juice off of my hand, and I've never gotten sick from it. I think that's overkill right there, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, nicotine is toxic. It used to be used as bug poison. And the theory is that the reason nicotine exists in the leaves is so bugs won't eat the plants. That's probably also the reason that morphine exists in poppies. And who knows? Although marijuana is not toxic and animals love to eat it. And deer are the bane of outdoor marijuana farmers.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's pretty hilarious. But I knew this article would bring it back to, but my children's.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And as far as that's concerned, if you're a responsible parent, you will keep your e-cigarette juice locked in a cabinet or in a cabinet.
Yeah. We don't have kids, but we have cats, and we keep it in a cabinet that they would not physically be capable of getting into. And whenever I fill my vape thing, my vape stick, I do it on the counter with the sink next to me. I have running water there, and I clean up with a paper towel I don't usually spill any, but I wipe the counter down with the paper towel and then wipe it dry with another paper towel and then throw those away. I make sure that I think about my kitties and I don't want them to get any of this. Yeah.
Yeah. And my dog's a chewer, so I use only glass bottles and keep them away from him.
You have a dog story about my cats, and they've never met, but go ahead and tell that.
Oh, well, I have a hunting dog, and he goes crazy for other, small animal scents. And when I opened up the package that you sent me, it was like a bubble wrap mailer. He stuck his entire head in it and pretty much got it stuck on his head because he was going crazy smelling the cats.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they touched it, but they're in the room with it. There's probably a couple cat hairs in there. I could probably never murder anyone and get away with it because they could DNA match the cat hair that I would invariably leave on the body, according to what I see on CSI.
Yeah, I go to the gym and I'm covered in cat hair, and I'm like, the men at the gym must think I'm this lonely cat lady. Plus, I'm there on like a Saturday night as well.
Yeah. What I've always said is that the people who change the world are not the people who are out dancing on a Saturday night.
Huh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Although a lot of people who are home on a Saturday night are the people who change the world, but a lot of people who are home on a Saturday night are just the people trying to win free stuff on the internet because they're on disability and when they don't need to be. All right, here we go.
Okay.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
È stato sperimentato.
The United States government presents
no vision.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto es por su parte considerado.
To provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Michael Dean. Michael Dean After Dark. We do not recommend that you inject e-cigarette fluid. And apparently it's becoming a fatal fad among toddlers, according to idiots who want to scare people. We don't want to scare people here on this show. I'm Michael Dean After Dark. We want to do good works and bring truth, justice, bring truth and justice to the American way. So, Nikki.
Yes.
Yes.
Michael.
Do you think that, are you sipping some e-cigarette fluid?
I'm sipping on some e-juice syrup.
No, you're not.
No, that wasn't funny.
Yeah. So, there's some scare articles out there that basically, if you believe what you read in the press, I won't even say the mainstream press because this is the alternative press we're reading this from, Reason Magazine. Although they're talking about New York Times warning about it. But basically, if you believe what you read today, e-cigarettes and Bitcoin will kill you and destroy the economy. When in fact, e-cigarettes, I haven't smoked a cigarette in a year. My wife and I haven't, and we're a lot healthier because we're vaping. So I don't need a government test to tell me I feel better. I feel better. And Bitcoin is good for the economy, and it's bad for the economy that's based on theft and aggression and violence, which is the government. Because when you use their money, you're encouraging them. You're just encouraging them. Don't encourage them. So you were telling me about an organization that wants to self-regulate the e-vape world before the government does. And we have mixed feelings on this, but go ahead and tell me about it. What's it called?
It's called AEMSA, AEMSA, the American E-Liquid Manufacturing Standards Association. And it was started by some really smart people within the vape community because they knew that eventually e-cigarettes would face FDA scrutiny. They wanted to already have these standards in place so they could go to the FDA and explain to them that they've done a really good job of self-regulating already. And I believe to be able to carry an AEMSA sticker on your e-cigarette juice, you have to adhere to their standards, some of them being you have to have child-proof caps, you have to have the plastic wrap that you have to break first around the caps, you have to have a certified clean room where someone from AEMSA will come and inspect your clean room like once a year or something, and then you have to pay for that, obviously. But this, at first, there was a big squabble about this in the vaping community because some people said that it would put the little guys out of business who couldn't afford this. And then AEMSA said, no, you just don't need to carry our label. It's, you know, someone even used the term free market. Like, it's the free market. You don't need our label, but just know that, you know, you might not be seen as well as some of these other people. So that's what it is, and it's, I'm 50-50 on it.
Well, in the lack of an oppressive force like the FDA, who, think about it historically, think about how many drugs the FDA has recalled because they kill people, and they were drugs that were originally passed by the FDA, and getting anything passed by the FDA requires millions of dollars. So it basically, when someone comes up with a new medicine that can be useful, or a food or drug, you know, food too, they basically do keep the little guys out because they require that anybody who plays in their, I wouldn't say in their sandbox, I would say in the world sandbox, in the American sandbox of America, because they control it with coercion. You know,
it's
basically
a,
they
protection
keep
racket.
Yeah, but I would say that in the lack of something like the FDA, something like AIMSA would be a great idea. I still think it's a pretty good idea. I don't know how I feel. I feel the 50-50. I feel the negative I would feel is the whenever there's something that's new and unusual and scares people who don't understand change and want to cling to the past and to the paternalistic protection of the government, they whenever there's something like that coming, like with e-vaping or with vaping or with Bitcoin, for instance, the big players often line up and want to like pre-comply, you know. That's happening with Bitcoin too. And the thing is, Bitcoin can't really be stopped and vaping can't really be stopped. And it's just going to create a black market if they overregulate, if they regulate it.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about their contingency plans if perhaps the FDA gets rid of all e-cigarettes and it's like, oh, I'm going to start extracting nicotine from eggplants and, you know, growing my own tobacco. Like the people in the vaping community, some of them are so passionate about this. They show up at Congress. They show up at the FDA in Bethesda to go to, you know, hearings and stuff. It's kind of inspiring in a way, but then I think about it and I say, it's like a brick wall when you're dealing with the government. It's like theater. They'll let you speak to let you feel like you've made a difference, but they're going to come to their own conclusion no matter what.
Yeah, they do whatever they want anyway. And people have been seeing that more and more at the local level too, with city councils and things like that, where they say, we encourage people to become part of the process. And then they show up and become part of the process and get thrown out. You know, when basically all they're doing, all the people are showing up saying is, I don't want to be forced to do something by you. You know, when it's usually something that, like, there's no victim, like having your fence, you know, 6 1/4 feet high instead of 6 feet high, and they'll take your house for things like that. So, but we don't really want to get into that kind of end of the tyranny. We just want to mention the idea of people trying to get ahead of government regulations and kind of pre-regulate. I basically, I'm all in favor of boards that don't exist with government coercion, private boards that certify things. Like, you know, when I go to buy an electrical device, I look for the UL symbol on it, you know, the Underwriters Laboratories, which is a private board which does a good job testing things. And there's another board too for electrical stuff. I forget what it is, but I recognize the logo when I see it. And, you know, the Better Business Bureau, that's not part of the government. That's a private organization.
And like my mom, for instance, uses Checkbook Magazine to, you know, get everyone that she hires, she looks up through Checkbook Magazine.
I don't know what that is. Tell me about it.
It's sort of just like a Yelp, only it's more professional. It's been around for a really long time. And if you're a great business and you have enough recommendations, you can make it in a Checkbook Magazine, and it usually boosts your business as well.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. I like that. Yeah. I mean, I really a lot of what the what any government does that they claim they need a monopoly to do can be done and is done better by private organizations.
So. Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, let the market regulate itself. Reputation is the key.
Yeah. Yeah. Without the government, who would build the roads? Yelp.com.
Yeah, exactly. There would be somebody, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny that people bring up the roads all the time as the default. I think they must teach that in government-controlled public high school because so many people go straight to the roads. It's a cliche. And the thing is, there's very little that governments do that is more universally fraught with bribes and backroom deals than the roads. I mean, there's usually literally the mafia involved. And if it's not the mafia, it's like, you know, the brother-in-law of the state senator gets the contract with his construction company.
Oh, yeah, it's a total sweetheart deal. But I think with roads, you ask somebody immediately, like, what benefits do you receive from the government? And most people that don't receive benefits have to think about it, and they go, oh, well, the roads and the schools and the post office and stuff like that. Because if you're a working person, you normally – your interaction with government is very little.
I joked with my mailman today. I like my mailman because he doesn't leave. When I'm home, I often have the front door open, you know, not the glass door, but the other door. So the cats can sit in the sun. And the mailman comes and the cats run away. And, you know, if he has a package, he knocks just a couple times on the door, like two knuckles twice. And so I can come get the package. So there's not a package sitting on my door. And he did that today. And I was like, oh, thanks. It was from the Plume Room. It was vaped. Nice. And then he handed me a bunch of junk mail. And I said, oh, and some junk mail. And he laughed and he said, got to bring the junk mail. And I was kind of thinking, like, how sad. Like, that's what your job exists for, basically, you know?
Yeah, it is really sad. And I like my mailman, too. And a lot of people who bash the post office, I mean, they don't like their mailmans.
Well, in California, I had a lot of mailmen that were drunks. It seems to be a job that you can do and be a drunk. Like, I would literally smell alcohol on my mailman, and he would often put my mail in my neighbor's box and vice versa, which is really bad drunk mailman behavior.
And it's sad because he's out there drinking and driving.
I don't know if he's driving. I guess, yeah. I mean, he drives to a place and then walks around a bunch, but
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about intellectual property.
Goodness.
Is that a tough topic for you, Nikki?
Well, I mean, I do argue with – I've actually argued with Stephen Kinsella on this and
– Stephen Kinsella.
And I just – I had to let the conversation go because he's rough around the edges.
Well, he's a libertarian who is anti-intellectual property laws who, interestingly and kind of ironically to a lot of people – his job is he is an intellectual property attorney.
Yeah, there you go.
Which there's nothing hypocritical about it. A lot of what he does is work where he's protecting people against intellectual property law. But
okay, and that's understandable because I feel, again, like the AIMSA, I feel 50-50 on it because as an artist, I have had some of my work ripped off from me in numerous different occasions. And I do believe that there is some sort of need for, whether it be a trade group or whatever, to help people with that sort of issue, but it has become a monopoly by the government. But I will tell you that the Patent Office does not take congressional funds. They're a quasi agency, and they pretty much run on their own profit, which means you go to the patent office, you pay them to file a patent for you. They have their own courts. They run everything on their own. Now, I'm not saying that it's right because they have
that. And that doesn't make me feel any better because the same argument is often made about the post office. Oh, they're not really part of the government and they're not paid for by taxpayer money, but they are. They're guaranteed to be bailed out and all of their pensions are guaranteed by the government to be bailed out. So anything that's, the Federal Reserve isn't really part of the federal government, but they are very integrated into the federal government. You can't really separate them.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more on Michael Dean After Dark. Some interesting radio, some disagreements about intellectual property laws.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Michael Dean After Dark. Tickling the hamster in your brain since 2014. So we were discussing, Nikki Darling and I were discussing intellectual property laws, and by that we mean copyright, trademark, and patent. And she is slightly for them, and I am absolutely against them. I didn't say that, but I'll get that on record. So, Nikki, how have you had your art stolen?
I'm a jewelry designer. I make very unique gauged earrings, and I've had a few, but which I guess looking back now, I can say if you put your stuff out there, it's bound to get copied, but I've definitely had designs copied to the T. It's been pretty upsetting to me, but I don't ever say, oh, I'm going to call somebody and send them after this person. I just sort of shrug. And then it does keep me motivated to come up with new ideas, especially ones I feel can't be copied.
You know, what I kind of feel about this is on a basic level, I don't really feel that, I don't really feel that any work of design or thought or art or basically I don't think any idea should or can be protected. And I say should because if everything throughout history had been patented, we'd all be living in ditches because progress technologically comes from people sharing ideas. And you build off of the work of others and you stand on the shoulders of giants. And every year more is invented and done to advance the world than was done in the previous year because you're standing on all the previous years. You know, you can't invent podcasting until you have a microphone. You can't invent a mic, you know, you can't have the telephone until you have a microphone on the way back to like fire and the wheel and the fulcrum. And so that's why I think that things shouldn't be protected by law, you know, ideas that people come up with. And I think they cannot be protected. Here, that's the real thing. Like there are some libertarians out there other than you who believe in some kind of protection and not having their stuff copied, like L. Neil Smith and Scott Beezer. And I respect both those guys' work a lot. I mean, some of their graphic novels are like, help me envision help me envision libertarian paradise, which is important because you have to kind of envision how things are, which is what this radio show is. It's basically the radio show that I think would largely exist after the government gets out of the way. We're talking about tyranny right now, but I'm actually talking about the opposite of it too. So I really think that things cannot be kept from being copied. Like, I really think that it's a losing battle for movie studios to try to prosecute people for copying their movies and sharing them on the torrents. And what's come out of that is things like Netflix that basically prevent people from going as much to things like Pirate Bay. Because for a very inexpensive price, like $15 a month, you could basically watch almost any movie ever made quicker than you could find it and download it from the Pirate Bay.
Yeah, it's a great service. You know? Yeah.
So I think that the answer isn't even any kind of like private guild to protect intellectual property. I think it's technology. And here's another thing. I think that as far as something, you know, there's different kinds of copying. Like if I put out a movie on a DVD and someone makes an exact copy of that DVD, which contains all the attribution, they're not claiming my work is theirs. They're just not buying it. I'm absolutely fine with that. I would be upset, and I do understand, and I think you're rightfully upset by someone taking your design, copying it, and saying it's their design. Now, here's what I think could be done about that. You can put things in the blockchain of cryptocurrencies, especially Namecoin is really well built for this, and it's a lot cheaper than Bitcoin, so it's a lot better to do this with. You know, you can put like 113 characters, I think it is, in a transaction in the blockchain. You can literally do a non-governmental like trademark with it. I wouldn't call it a trademark, I would call it establishing original design. And in that amount of trademarks, like in ASCII art or even in a really, really low res graphic, you could put your design in there.
Or yeah, it's an invisible metadata watermark. You can like do that in Photoshop.
Oh, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you know, like let's say I invented a new process and I want to be credited for it and I can describe it in one paragraph. I can put it right now in a Namecoin transaction, and then, you know, publish it on my website and on, I guess if you're on Facebook, and then when somebody comes along and steals your thing, you can shame them and point to this and say, I came up with this first, here's proof. Irrefutable proof. Better than proof with the patent office, because that could be faked. We'll be back.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. MeowBit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. MeowBit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address in our free software, MeowBit. Go to meowbit.com. That's MeowBit.com.
Yeah, it's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, on my other show, my nighttime show, Michael Dean After Dark. Hello, Nikki, darling, how you doing?
I'm great, how are you?
I'm good, and we're talking about art and making a living selling art, and you are a fabulous photographer, which is a lot to say these days, because now that the... Now that everyone's got a camera, everyone's a photographer.
Mm-hmm. You're right, yeah.
The competition's really gone up. Like, I actually used to develop photos in a dark room in the 70s. Like, I started doing that when I was a kid. And I had an uncle that was a semi-professional photographer who really influenced me a lot. And I've actually, like, thanked my uncle, Rod. He passed away recently, Rod Mason. Mm. I've thanked him as an inspiration in several books and movies I did, because... He was like this really kind of square guy. He was a cow farmer, like literally owned a cow farm, milked cows every morning his whole life, which I thought was pretty cool too. So I was drinking raw milk like in the 60s. You know, when libertarian hipsters come up to me now and they're like, "Hey man, you should try raw milk. It's really cool." And I'm like, "I was drinking that 20 years before you were born and I didn't like it then, but I'll fight for your right to keep it." Cuz it is a political thing now. So you know, this guy, Rod Mason, my uncle, I really, really dug him because I used to hang out with him in the dark room. I used to watch him work. I used to watch him take pictures. He also, I thought it was kind of cool because he was like a really Christian guy, but he got to have, he had coffee table books with naked women in them. They were very tasteful. They were art books, but I was like, oh, if you're an artist, you can have pictures of naked ladies, you know? So I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, he was like the only person in my extended family that had anything like that. And he wasn't a guy who would have pornography, but he could have those books out on the coffee table because he was a photographer. And I thought that was pretty cool. So, but now everyone's got a camera, and there's a famous quote by, I forget who it is. It's some filmmaker who said that film will only truly become a medium of art when the materials for it are as cheap as pencil and paper. And we've kind of gotten to that point with video and with photography. Like, everybody in their pocket has a high def video and still camera in their cell phone that looks great. I mean, it looks like, you know, you can shoot stuff with an iPhone that looks as clear as like the footage from the moon shot by NASA, who had like the most advanced equipment in the world in 1969. And that's in your pocket.
Yeah. But that's just the technical aspect of it. There's definitely like, you know, an emotional aspect of it as well.
Yeah. Well, I could say very clearly that Nikki's photography is really, really excellent. She's truly an artist.
And, thank you.
And I'm going to give her some tough love here, which is, if you want to make a living at art forever, which I do, you have to, when you're working for pay, you have to look at your art like a pound of butter. It's art when it's in your hands. As soon as it's delivered to the client or anyone remotely related to the client, it's a pound of butter. It's not art anymore, and they can do what they want with it if you want to keep employed as an artist.
Yeah, you're right. One of my first published photographic documentaries was taken by the editor, and he actually picked the photos that I wasn't comfortable with being published, more for the shock value of it. And I felt in the end that he really made my story look more shock and awe than an actual documentary. And I was kind of sad by that. But I did realize, you know, he's the editor. It's his choice. I gave him the photos to choose from.
Yeah, I kind of look at it like throwing a message in a bottle out to the world, and you don't have any control on it once it's left your room. And I actually, when I was a kid, it's kind of neat. My dad, I put a message in a bottle. I was like, I'd heard of a message in a bottle and all the stories about him. And I actually put a message in a bottle and sealed it up. It was my address. It was like, hey, if you find this, write me a letter, you know, and I had my home address, and I threw it in Lake Erie. And about a month later, we got a letter from Lackawanna, which is near Buffalo, about 70 miles away, of someone who found it. And my dad called the local newspaper, and they wrote an article about it. That's so cool. How small of a town this was. But it was kind of a magical thing for me, because when I was a kid, this is before the internet. I'm going to be 50 years old in May. And, you know, I grew up loving art, and I did it when it was really hard to do. Like, to take a picture, you had to, you know, buy film and either take it to the drugstore and pay money and wait a week for it to get back, or develop it yourself in a dark room. You know, if you wanted to, like, write an article and submit it to a magazine, you had to type it on a manual typewriter and put it in the mail. And, like, you know, like, we didn't have a Xerox machine even. Like, if you wanted to send it out to multiple magazines, you had to type it out multiple times. And that was kind of my background on this. So I've really been jazzed about the technological changes, and I've really embraced them. I've not been any kind of Luddite and been a first or second adopter on most things that have come along. You know, I was on the internet before there was a web. I was on the internet in 91. I was on the web, and I had a website in 96. I had DSL in 96. Nobody had DSL in 96. So I've kind of jumped on the bandwagon of all this stuff that's come along. And now I'm like helping build the next thing with my friend Derek with MeowBit, with .bit domains. People should go to meowbit.com and check it out. But
not Derek J, right?
No, Derek Slopey. Oh, okay. Derek Slopey, who made the Silver Dime app. You've probably heard of that. It's for comparing like silver dime prices to Bitcoin or something. It's for mobile phones. So, but I grew up in this really tiny town. It's called Westfield, New York, and it's on Lake Erie, and it's like 3,000 people, and it's in rural New York State. It's as far from New York City as you can be and be in New York State. It's like 500 miles from New York City. And I grew up like cutting class to go to the library because I wanted to learn. You know, I was always really obsessed with learning, and I was really was obsessed with not necessarily getting out of my town when I was that young, but with like touching the world from wherever I was. Like, I used to build little radio transmitters and, you know, transmit, be the most powerful station in the tri-yard area, things like that. And I actually used to like write to, you know, this is before the internet, and I wanted friends in other places, and they used to have pen pal listings in the back of like Boys Life magazine.
Oh, I thought they did that through the post office too.
Maybe, but I did it through magazines and newspapers. And I mean, think about how weird this is. Like, my parents had no problem with me like writing to strangers in other towns with my home address. Like, as soon as the day I turned 18, I got a P.O. box, and I've had a P.O. box since then because I never like to give out my address.
Yeah, that's smart.
But yeah, man, it was, I was always like trying to reach outside the world. So when the internet came along, I was like, this is what I've been looking for forever. And computers, you know, I basically sat my butt down in front of a computer in 1994 and haven't gotten up since. That's an exaggeration, but, and the thing, the ability of computers to make pure digital copies of things and send them thousands of copies of it around the world instantly really turned me on. It was like, this isn't bad, this is good. And as a content creator, I was like, I don't, you know, and I'd made money at music before. Like, I was in a band that was signed to Warner Brothers, and I was like, wait, you can share music? You can do that? And it was like, it was amazing to me. And there wasn't even a business model yet for giving it away in different non-copyright models and making money at it. Like, you know, iTunes didn't exist yet. Other things like that. Creative Commons license did not exist yet, but I was still like, this is the way to do it. And since then, you know, I've kind of embraced things like the Creative Commons licenses, and giving away music and still making money at it, giving away books and stuff. I mean, I put a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 unported license on everything I do, which basically means anybody can take it and copy it and give it away. They can even sell it. They can take parts of it and remix it and sell it and call it their own. Anything they want to do, as long as they still put my name on it as a source, which I really like that because I feel like people are going to do that anyway. And actually, if you put that license on things, it absolutely establishes that you came up with something, but it also enables you to sell it. And I make more money giving art, selling art and giving it away than I used to make just selling it.
Yeah, but what do you do if somebody doesn't attribute you?
They often don't. In really small things, I don't care. In really big things, I make fun of them on my blog and point it out.
Okay.
I'm not on Facebook. I used to have 3,500 friends on there, but I deleted my account. I don't like Facebook. I don't like hanging out on it. I don't like how they constantly change their terms of service, which is completely legal and ethical, but I feel like it's sleazy. I feel like it's like basically we all built that site by spending a lot of time on there, and then they reduced the usefulness of it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's their right to do that, but I voted with my feet by leaving. So I have a lot of my own sites, and, you know, they have big little followings, and if somebody did something like that, I would point it out and make fun of them and get other people to make fun of them or let people make fun of them.
Yeah, but what if that person took it, they didn't attribute you, and then they made like $1 million off of it?
It hasn't happened yet. I don't think that's going to happen.
I know, but we always come up with the hypothetical, like what if that were to happen? Because I feel like there have been some little people in the past who came up with ideas and then they were taken and someone else got rich off of someone else's ideas.
There's another thing that I do, and this is another piece of, I wouldn't even say tough love, but just really good advice for anybody working as an artist, being self-employed. I actually put this in really clear words at one point. I wonder if I can remember it now. Something to the effect of, make projects that have yourself as such an integral part of them that they can't be done without you. You know, like for instance, I came up with the movie, the idea DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. It was the first movie that interviewed a bunch of punk rockers that ever came out. It also interviewed a bunch of painters and some sculptors and a couple software designers. And it also interviewed some famous people like Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Dave Brocky from Guar, but it also interviewed a couple people who were completely unknown or barely known and painted them in the same light. And that was unique. Now, if I described this idea and the title to somebody else before I did it, and somebody else took the title and did it, it would not have been the same movie. It was like the fact that I made it the way I made it put my fingerprints over it so much that even if I'd said that idea to people before I did it, they could have stolen it and it would not have been stealing because it wouldn't have been the same thing.
Yeah. But I think I posed this question to an author once too. Like what if they literally took your project, like digitally copied it from the internet and then just changed the name on it, like so-and-so by, and then put their name.
Well, I don't put anything out on the internet until it's complete enough. I mean, basically it's like, it'd be up on my blog first. There'd be proof that it wasn't, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, who would, anybody have to be an idiot in this day and age to try to do that? I don't think that would really happen. I guess it could happen, but it's not a fear. It doesn't keep me up at night. It's never happened. And I put out art constantly.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
We
This is the end segment of Michael Dean After Dark for this evening. We're back five nights a week here. And this is the part that we usually call the redemption in the third act, where we end on a happy note and send you off to bed happy and feeling groovy about yourself instead of scared like most late night shows send you off. So, yep, we're going to start here and we're going to talk about it. So, Nikki, we were talking about copyright and trademark and stuff like that. What do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
I never was for a government agency for it. I am something more on the lines of an organization that you can join, and if your stuff is ripped off, they have a large reach, and they will call out the person that ripped you off. It'll be public, very public. It'll shame that person. I just don't think there's something like that for right now.
Yeah, so you talked about your friend. Tell me really quickly about your friend with the mustaches.
She came up with an idea for making mustaches to put on electronic cigarettes. Really great idea. Had never been thought of before. She did it. Within 6 months, someone in China was already reproducing them.
Yeah, and you said they ordered one.
Yeah.
To reverse engineer. Yeah. Yes. The company that puts out my DVDs, Music Video Distributors, MVD, told me that, you know, I asked him one time about, like, what are your foreign sales when I was starting to work with them? And he's like, well, we sell a lot of stuff to Europe and Canada. We've not done much in the Middle East. Somebody in China ordered one copy of, you know, all 700 different DVDs we offer, but they never ordered any more. And I said, you don't get what that means? And he said, no. And I said, I think that means they ordered one copy of all of them so they could copy them and bootleg them. And there was a long silence. And he said, I think I'm going to be sick. But here's my question. What possible organization could have the reach to have protected your friend with the mustaches from China?
Something like Yelp, perhaps, that's online. That's usually everybody's go-to when they're searching out recommendations for restaurants or stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any solution to it, man. I really don't. I really think that, I mean, you were giving hypotheticals that were, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but so not something I would worry about that, I mean, it's the chances of them are, you know, I said, well, you know, someone also might stealthily sneak into my house in the middle of the night and shoot me in the head and steal all my stuff, but before I can wake up and defend myself, but it's unlikely.
Yeah, you know? But the world is full of nefarious people, and if you give someone an inch, sometimes they take a mile.
Yeah, you have more of a feeling that the world is full of nefarious people because you spend a lot of time on Facebook. I'm serious.
No, it has nothing to do with Facebook.
They congregate on there.
Well, I don't necessarily think that.
They amplify on there. They amplify. The effect of them amplifies on there.
I've been around a lot of nefarious people in my life, I'll tell you that.
I have too, but I've gotten away from them, usually gotten out pretty unscathed. But back to, like, protecting your work. The bottom line in it is you can't. So I think it makes more sense to embrace things like Creative Commons licensing, which is still working within the system. It's still literally copyright with different, with less restrictions. People don't understand that. But if you put one of those licenses on it, first of all, you establish, and then you publish it basically to the world in some way. You basically establish that you came up with it first. So if somebody copies it later, you can at least point to it and say, I did this first. They copied me. And secondly, it's like flattery is the biggest form of, you know, copying is the biggest form of flattery, really. I mean, I just think people are, I think that artists in a lot of times waste a lot of time and a lot of energy that they should be doing art and marketing art, worrying about what if someone does this or someone did this to me. I mean, the amount of time
but
it takes.
They also want to eat. They want to feed themselves.
Has anyone taken bread off your table by copying your art?
I'm sure that this person is making a lot more money than me on earrings that I've designed.
Well, I don't really know where to go with that because the show's over. So, you know, I try to make myself the most sellable product that I come up with, basically, is what it comes down to. So
totally.
We'll be back with more. Nikki will be back another time.
Word.
I'm Michael Dean After Dark. Worms.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.